The return of our tech team. What do you want to know about the gadgets, computers, and devices in your life? Yesterday, Microsoft announced a new program to provide broadband internet to rural parts of America using something called white space technology. Maine is one of the 12 states included in the program. What does this mean for Maine? Also, today has been declared Net Neutrality Day. Internet giants such as Google and Amazon are hoping that today users will pressure Congress to not water down net neutrality laws. I'm Jennifer Rooks. These are just a couple of the tech stories in the news today. And today on Maine Calling, we will discuss them and their potential impact on you. We'll also answer your more everyday tech questions. And we'll learn about something called VPNs, virtual private networks, and how they might keep you more secure. It's Personal Tech Day on Maine Calling. But first, this news update. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Virtual private networks, or VPNs, have been much in the news lately. What are they, and how complicated are they to set up? Also, just what is the white space technology that Microsoft plans to bring to parts of Maine? Well, today we turn to our tech team for those questions and any other personal technology issue that has got you at wit's end. With me in the studio, Janet McKenney. She is Director of Library Development for the Maine State Library. Jared Maxfield is owner of Necessary Technology, and Andrew Rosenstein is the owner of Techport. As always, we want to hear from you. What tech questions do you have? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Hi, everybody.
Hi, hey. How are you?
So, you hear my notes that I want to talk about white space technology, Net Neutrality Day, VPNs, and gadgets. But we're going to start with this white space technology. Andrew, Microsoft made an announcement yesterday that it'll be using white space technology to bring internet to rural Maine, and that Maine is part of the project. I know that getting internet to rural Maine is one of the most important issues to you. So what is this, and will it work?
Well, it's a great idea to use the bandwidth that's been associated with television to beam to provide Wi-Fi internet connection to rural areas, and it's a pretty unique new idea that can extend the range. It's sort of based on the idea that you can have wireless nodes in different locations to provide coverage. And so you can skip the wired solution, which we're also used to the cable.
How fast will it be?
It can be as fast as wired networks. It can be even faster. It sort of depends on how on who's behind the project and how much they're willing to push the signal. But remember all those UHF stations that we used to try and tune in to? Well, that's pretty much unused as part of the broadcast spectrum, and Wi-Fi and internet services can travel over that same bandwidth.
Janet, you have some experience with this.
Yeah, back in 2013, the Gigabit Libraries Network started playing around with it. So, you know, we signed on to become informed about it. And it was more important, I think, in libraries elsewhere that had branch systems where, like, the main library could get a high-speed connection, but there was no way to get connections further out to these rural branches. So in Colorado and Kansas and other locations, you know, they signed on and got the grants, you know, before we did in Maine, because we had the Maine School and Library networks, and we don't have any branches except in Portland. So, but it was successful in most libraries back in 2013 through 15. There was some problems with the speed, but new technology has made those speeds faster, so it is being used at libraries nationally. And here in Maine, the Millinocket Public Library just got a white space grant from the Gigabit Libraries Network called Beyond the Walls, and they're experimenting with taking a connection at the library and using it for, like, a wider library public Wi-Fi, like in the park or whatever. So It'll be really interesting. A lot has to do with FCC rules and E-rate and everything in Maine. But so the Millinocket one is an experience. But they got a $15,000 grant to do the tower and all the infrastructure.
Okay. So, Jared, get my mind around this, because as of yesterday, my understanding was the only way to get high-speed internet was to have a certain kind of wire. It had to be, you know, have glass connectivity, you know, glass fibers, and it had to, that was the only thing that was going to be good enough for the future. Now we're using UHF, white space?
Yeah, it's actually, it's kind of a brilliant backwards thinking idea, because a lot of us don't even, you know, those of us remember, you watch TV. I mean, TV used to come through the air, you know, not over a wire. So it was the original technology that was out there. So the folks at Microsoft and people that have been working with us realize that those frequencies are still out there. I believe they actually called white space, essentially, it was the lost frequencies between what was actually being transmitted. So, and we've done this with lots of different things. There's all kinds of the government controls a lot of frequencies that the broadband guys actually would love to be able to use, and that's always been a debate. But wireless, I mean, we've seen it with our phones over the last 10 years. I mean, just look how fast, even though sometimes your phone seems slow, if you want to put yourself back 5 or 10 years ago, I mean, it's infinitely faster. We've gone from 3G to 4G to LTE. So using frequencies and radio waves and things like that is an absolute fine way to transmit and get good speeds. They're working on different projects using essentially laser beams to send, you know, any way you can send a packet of data is a way. I think Facebook and Google and different companies have been working on things like drones and balloons and, you know, how do they get the signal up in the air and then beam it down. So what they've done with this project, and is really exciting for us, and all credit to Andrew, because he's been the number one guy saying this for every time we come on, but rural Maine and the folks that call us in here all the time, you know, they have horrible internet options, and it's bad for their economy, it's bad for education, it's bad for the people that live up there. So this opens up a way where there will be some investment by the people that build it. There will be some investment from the people that will need to purchase equipment to put in their home or office. But, yeah, I mean, if we could all of a sudden even get halfway decent internet to, you know, places in rural Maine where they can't get it now without having the whole infrastructure of laying that wire, is, you know, it's an unbelievable opportunity for us. And to have someone as big as Microsoft pushing it, because there's also the business opportunity, because essentially what they're doing is creating a brand new broadband internet delivery market without having to go and, you know, our Spectrums and Time Warners had to pay to lay all the lines and do all that infrastructure. They'll have some, but if you don't have to run those lines, that really will open up the opportunity for people and for our state.
Sure. Andrew, what do we know about the project in Maine? Where is it starting? When will it happen? How many homes and businesses will be affected?
Well, all of those businesses that are that last mile, and homes and businesses that are too remote for wired service, yet have substantial populations. It looks to me like it's planned to be phased in over the next 2 or 3 years. And being able to they've done experiments in a couple of different cities where it's worked beautifully. Where there have been projects throughout the country that have provided internet service in small locations, but this is the first time they've been able to just target a rural state and go from there. And it's exciting to see what's going to happen the next couple of years. All those communities in rural Maine that have established business locations within their town, but they've been empty for years. This opens up a lot of opportunity for people to run businesses that need high-speed internet from any location they want.
Okay, Janet, it is something. Oh, you want to talk about this?
Yeah, no, I just wanted to say the cool thing about TV white spaces is that you don't need direct line of sight. And that's something with wireless and microwave that you need. And so that spectrum, how it goes out. And so it can go up to like 10 miles. Whereas, you know, when you're looking at wireless, and I don't know how far the wireless towers are, but it just works differently. And so in a rural area with all that available white space between, because there's not a lot of TV channels out in, you know, Piscataquis County, there's a lot of availability there.
It is Net Neutrality Day.
Yes.
It's interesting to me because what I read about Net Neutrality today, is that this is supposed to be a big effort where people across the country are writing their congressmen and women and demanding strong net neutrality protections. Yet, frankly, I'm not seeing very much on my social media feeds.
It's a little bit of a hard concept to grasp, but when it's talked about in these big terms, but it really is very simple. The point of net neutrality is that the same person that has somebody who has a blog can get the same kind of internet upload speed and audience that anyone who has that even a large company, that even Google or Microsoft or Apple. The idea is that there's equal access to everybody's information. The idea that some companies would be able to pay to push their information to the top and all the other information flows to the bottom. In fact, Google in Europe was just lost a large court case about determining how they position internet searches on their website and whether they actually push sponsored things to the top. So if you can think of net neutrality as a way to an antidote to sponsored content, then and we all get the same service everywhere, then it's a much easier thing to grasp. But the FCC is not particularly friendly at this point to that idea because businesses rely so much, there's so much money at stake that it's super important to get out there and shake the trees. And I know that Senator Angus King is very concerned about this, and Susan Collins as well. And those are the people who really have the ability to make changes.
Jared, explain this to me. How come Google and Facebook are pushing this grassroots effort for net neutrality? Wouldn't they benefit from not having net neutrality and being able to help control what you see?
I mean, there's one answer, and then there's the conspiracy theory answer in me, too. I mean, they're saying all the right things. The tech guy in me and the person that believes in net neutrality would like to believe that actually a lot of these tech companies were started by geeks. They just happened to turn into trillion-dollar companies. And I'd like to believe that the culture that they still subscribe to is one that believes in a free and open internet. This is, I find it concerning. It's just because, you know, and I have often for years referred to telling my customers that essentially your internet provider will essentially become like a utility. And essentially when the Obama administration made some changes on how they're regulated, and you can get into some pretty boring stuff under what titles they were, you know, are they a phone company, are they utility? But essentially, they changed it to treat these guys more like utility because they're in the public interest. The current administration doesn't think that's necessarily the case, and that by freeing up that quote-unquote overregulation will open up ways for them to, you know, create more revenue and create investment and things like that. You can go back and forth on whether they would actually do that. I actually recommend if, you know, Andrew had a good example. I think of it as right now the internet is a highway and there are no slow or fast lanes. Everything's exactly the same. By removing net neutrality, what we're giving the ability to the internet service providers is to essentially start selling fast lanes. So as an example, Andrew and I were in the computer repair business. We're small local businesses. If somebody goes and Googles us, well, we have an equal opportunity to come up the same as a big box store. What if all of a sudden this changes and the big box store can come in and pay the Comcast and Spectrums and AT&Ts of the world to make sure that their content gets to the top and also essentially runs faster and is easier to use? It puts people at a supreme disadvantage. Netflix could pay to have their content delivered faster than the next guy. I heard a great example the other day thinking about Netflix. Netflix makes TV shows. What if all of a sudden the Comcast goes, well, we control the pipe that goes to your house. We're going to start making TV shows. And we're going to push our stuff a lot and make it harder for Netflix to get to people. So I look at it as removing choice and freedom It's a door to potential censorship. You know, having others and especially corporations say what you can see and view and how it gets there. I truly think for our economy and education, the internet's a great tool to make, you know, definitely make our society worse in many ways, but also, you know, but there's so many benefits to it. And by allowing essentially money to start dictating who and how it gets there, you know, if CMP, they deregulate electricity, you can buy your electricity from electricity provider from Georgia. But what if all of a sudden CMP could say, okay, well, you can buy from them, but when you turn on the light, it's going to take 5 seconds instead of half a second. Quarter, right. You know, it's taking away that choice. And then eventually what will happen is, you know, if you can't get something, even if you want it and something else becomes more convenient, you might start to gravitate towards something else. And essentially we have now been pushed there and kind of bought. And I find it concerning and agree with the earlier statements. We should keep the internet free and open.
Janet, obviously all three of you are on the same side of this issue. No one here is going to argue against net neutrality. But why don't you talk to me from a library's point of view? Libraries are about information. Is this sort of the defining moment of our time for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's really, you know, look at the Maine School and Library Network. And so, you know, we're riding on different infrastructures as well and have agreements with different ISPs to provide stuff. And if all of a sudden it's going to cost more to provide different kinds of content, whether it's video streaming or whatever, you know, it's going to affect the consumer cost and it's going to affect costs for, you know, for libraries. And so, you know, depending on what information you're going to access. So I don't want my cable company telling me that, oh, well, if you subscribe to, you know, Amazon and Netflix and all these providers to do streaming content, then, you know, we just have to charge you a little bit more because that's what we've determined to do. I mean, it's opening up a whole can of worms as far as, you know, the haves and the have-nots. And, you know, as Andrew said, you know, right now the highway's really equal and they're, you know, you can choose to have more bandwidth, but the ISP isn't choosing for you what they'll give and what they'll, you know, like throttle and what they may charge.
And when you say ISP, you mean internet service provider.
Yeah.
If you have Comcast, Comcast is not choosing what you're able to see and what you're not able to see.
Yeah, the ALA has a Libraries Transform campaign, you know, with because statements, and the one of the ones for net neutrality is because ISPs shouldn't have VIPs. And so, you know, that's one that I've held on to. And it's, you know, who you are and do you have money, does that determine your internet content and how it's delivered to you? And
I'm looking at the clock, and we already have to take a break, and we haven't even talked about VPNs yet. If you'd like to join the conversation, join us at 1-800-399-3566, send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does BCM Environmental and Land Law, proud to announce the opening of their Portland office. Learn more at nhlandlaw.com. This summer, Maine Public is teaming up with Darlings and Literacy Volunteers of Bangor to share the joy of reading with children across Maine. Many children across our state have limited access to appropriate books. So Maine Public is collecting new books and pristine used books at Darlings and Maine Public locations. These books will be distributed at many of the Darlings Ice Cream for a Cause stops and also at two special literacy events, one in Augusta, one in Bangor. They will include Maine Public Air staff read to children, some photo opportunities with Clifford the Big Red Dog, and Darlings Ice Cream for a Cause truck, and other fun activities. For more information and all the details, including how to donate books, visit mainepublic.org and click on Events.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, all you need to know about virtual private networks. We will talk about those in just a minute. And answers to your questions about your personal technology. In the studio with me, Andrew Rosenstein, owner of Techport, Janet McKenney, the director of library development at the Maine State Library, and Jared Maxfield, the owner of Necessary Technology. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Facebook page. Jared, you're it. What is a VPN and why do I need one?
VPN is a virtual private network. Think of it like a tunnel. You can kind of tunnel through the internet. And since we're talking about the big bad ISPs, let's pick on them a little bit. I think we talked about this a few months ago, but the other thing, the ISPs are making out really well in the last few months with this new administration. You know, another thing they changed, I believe back in April, was the ISPs now have the ability to essentially collect and use and sell our information. So when you, whoever you get your internet provider through, if you get it from Spectrum, Time Warner, if you get it from AT&T, if you get it from Verizon, Fairpoint, these guys now have technically the ability, whether they'll do it or not, but to essentially monitor your traffic. What sites do you go to? What are you looking at? And then essentially tailor advertising, sell that information to people. So if you don't want to be seen on the internet, you can use essentially seen by that pipe that is controlled by these guys. The VPN, the virtual private network, essentially creates a tunnel out and then often to an unrecognizable spot. So right now it's, I don't know, I don't want to get too geeky, but through your IP address, it could basically be geographically targeted. Where are you located? Where are you from? When you're going through a VPN tunnel, you're basically masked from being tracked on the internet. So they don't really know your geography. They're not able to collect and keep your data. You know, it's almost like, again, thinking of like a tunnel. It's like putting a sleeve in that tunnel, so it's not connected. So the internet service providers won't actually be able to see what you're doing.
So you'll still use the internet service provider you already use.
Yep.
You would still use your Spectrum or your AT&T, but you would also subscribe to something called a VPN, probably pay a little fee per month.
Maybe.
And then when you log on, you log on through the VPN?
Like, yes. Well, it's kind of like you're camouflaged. It's basically... The VPN network
is your cloak of invisibility.
Yes, it's masking what you're doing. Now, the thing is, if you go back a little bit, you know, VPNs, and even now, it's not still for Joe and Jane America, but with these changes coming, it's becoming more of a almost a residential product that people are pushing because people really want their privacy. There are browsers. One's called, for example, the Tor browser, T-O-R. Some people are familiar with that. The Tor browser is used by people to go online and mask where you are. If you launch a Tor browser and go to Google, you might not get Google.com. You might get Google.fr for France because essentially Google thinks you're in France because essentially they're bouncing your signal. They're hiding where you are. They're masking your traffic. And that's been used for nefarious reasons. But for what we're talking about in this circumstance, the reason why it's going to be more important for some of us to want to have a VPN and use a service, or there's differently some hardware coming out where it's kind of built in with different routers and things like that, is to mask what you're doing, not because you're doing something wrong, but just because you value your privacy and you don't want to have that essentially wrapped up into another database and sold to somebody.
Okay, so Janet, I'm going to turn this to you. Some of what I've read says the headlines are things like why you need to have a VPN, why you must have a VPN. This is how one needs to protect oneself. Well, what if all you're doing online is reading the New York Times, maybe ordering some things from Amazon, maybe doing some online banking? Do you really need a VPN?
Well, if you're doing online banking on a public Wi-Fi network, then a VPN.
What about in your living room?
Well, in your living room, it depends. Do you live in a condo building? Do you live close to neighbors? Do your neighbor's wireless network come up when you go to select things? You know, from a privacy standpoint, for those that are really concerned about privacy, you know, the VPN is a really good idea. You know, I've been so conflicted by this because so many people use VPNs to mask where they are and what they're doing to get either illegal content or, you know, like download a movie illegally to pretend that they're somewhere else. And so, you know, there is the good and bad to it. So I actually put I'm on VPN right now. I subscribed to a month to one. I wanted to see how it affected the performance on my iPad and phone.
She's so, holding up her phone.
So yeah, so right now I installed it, you know, 2 days ago. So I did a little research. I picked one out, and so right now I have a little VPN sign right next to my LTE sign. So right now everything I do is in the tunnel.
Oh my gosh, Andrew, another thing to think about. My goodness, yeah. You people are giving us a headache.
I know. It was easy to
set up.
It's very easy. Yeah. Really great VPN clients, which is the software that you need on your machine to run this cloaking tunnel. Many of them have mobile applications. So you should probably pay for a service. There are free VPN services. But, I mean, it does get – we have to keep reevaluating our lives, essentially, because we can't trust – we're on a little bit of quicksand here because we're continually relitigating all of these things like net neutrality. What does somebody do with your visits to the New York Times and Amazon now that – journalists have was in the news today that journalists may be targeted for writing stories about different aspects of our government. Then it's really necessary to have a VPN to protect your privacy. Not only that, it's a darn good way to watch BBC.
Okay, on that note, we have at least two calls about VPN, so I'll go to those first, and then we'll go to the other tech questions. We'll go to William, who's calling from Kennebunk. Hi, William. Go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks for taking the call. I work for a Slovenian company, and I have to use a VPN to access our European servers to enter orders, check deliveries, etc. But it also gives me the advantage of using the VPN for, you know, when I travel to log into U.S. services, I can't get when I'm overseas. So I use it mainly for work, but also for consumption of content when I'm in places where it's not otherwise available.
And which VPN service do you use? Do you have a recommendation, William?
Yes, but I'm not sure I can say it on.
Oh, okay.
The air.
I'll have my guest give out recommendations.
I think I know that one.
The abbreviation is HMA. It works very good. It's not very expensive. Very simple. And as you were just saying, the mobile application that they use is excellent too. So very easy to use.
Okay, easy to use. We like to hear that.
Right. Yep.
Thank you. Thank you for your call. We'll move on to Bob in China. Hi, Bob. China, Maine. Nice to hear from you.
Yes, thank you. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to talk about a simpler version of the VPN, and that's the HTTPS. In other words, when you use Gmail, for instance, if it has the S or you log into your banking, you're actually using what I think of as a VPN. In other words, it's encrypted from the Gmail server all the way to your browser, and that's a really good thing to have. And I've really been paying attention to this. Google is actually making this more regular websites doing this. And recently I logged into a medical provider's site, and it was not HTTPS, so therefore I was putting information in about my health that was not, in my mind, protected. And my thinking is, and I've let them know, just make it HTTPS and you have a much more secure connection without going to this deeper level of getting software to really hide who you are. But this is the simple one that I think people should be using.
Great, Bob. Thanks. Jared, thoughts?
No, that's a good point, too. It's
not really enough to have
It's just not going to cover all your traffic. You know, I've just been sitting here thinking about your question a couple minutes ago, which was, well, if I just go online and read the New York Times. So I want to kind of connect these two things. Well, back in April, we now gave the ISPs the ability to essentially track, monitor, and sell or use for marketing purposes your traffic habits. So they see, you just go to New York Times. Not such a big deal. Well, now if we get rid of net neutrality – they can now package that data up, say, Jennifer just likes to go to New York Times. Well, maybe Breitbart comes in and now can do a deal with them to say, hey, we want our content to be higher up and get faster, and we want to be able to get that. So they can actually start to tailor or sell you. And, you know, if you like Pepsi, they can now have the ability to kind of force feed you Coke. You know, it's taking these are two big things that are connected. But that ability to track and monitor your data, combined with the fact that if we now give them the ability to kind of create super highways and super lanes and sell them to the highest bidder. Yeah, I mean, even someone just doing the most normal things, you know, on a macro, they can start to change our habits and what you look at. So, you know, we all want to think of ourselves as unique and single-minded, but frankly, with the amount of information we're bombarded with every day, are we? Or are we kind of – are we going with the flow or are we making the flow? And with some of these rules, they're gonna make a flow that a lot of us are just going to go with and not realize. And, you know, I kind of look down the road. I feel like I'll be an old man someday and say, I remember when the internet was free and open and, you know – there was we've gone from Napster to now, you know, ripping music is much harder business. We're all pretty much conditioned to buy stuff from Apple Music and Amazon. So in another 10 years.
Which we should.
Yes, which we should. Buy your music. A lot of people get paid. Don't steal your music and your movies. But we're being conditioned. So where are we going to be another 5 or 10 years if some of these rules come down the pike? So it should be concerning to anyone that puts any device online and uses it for information.
Back to Bob's question, Andrew, you say HTTPS isn't enough these days.
Right. It does provide a huge amount of security, especially when you're logging into your bank account. Financial institutions and medical institutions have been really at the forefront of the security, especially financial, because they have a lot more to lose in many ways. And that is fine for most users. But again, do we want somebody we don't know to build a profile of who we are, how we vote, what we buy, what time we get up in the morning, where we work, all of these things? There are the data that we present to the world is our most private information. And it's being traded and paid for for the highest bid. And it's really not such a great thing. And so why not spend $14.95 or whatever it takes to provide yourself with a little more security and outsmart people who are extremely smart and have thought of things to do with our data that we can't even imagine yet. That's the biggest problem, that you open this door, and we're talking about a few basic things here, but there is such a deeper level to what data mining can do and what a loss of net internet freedom can do to undermine, to change our world in ways we don't want.
We have a tweet from John. ISPs are common carriers, and they have benefit as such. Now they want to throttle the web. Do your part. So I think that's tweet is somebody encouraging people to take part in Net Neutrality Day.
Yeah, I posted on the Maine Calling Facebook page a link to comment to the FCC about what you think. And I also provided a link. I went with Wikipedia because it was a short, brief description of what net neutrality is all about.
The ad networks online have gotten so sophisticated. We've all now seen when you go to Amazon or eBay or whatever site and you look at a product, and all of a sudden 2 or 3 days later you're on some other totally random site and there's a banner ad on the side for that same product because all of our default settings essentially allow us to be tracked.
Oh, sure, and that's really tricky around holiday time when you're looking at ideas
for
things to order for your spouse who also uses the same computer.
But it's kind of creepy. And if you think about the ISPs, we tell Google more than we tell almost anybody. I mean, let's be honest here.
It's true.
You go in the bathroom one morning and you see something weird that you don't know what it is. What do? You Google it, right? You don't even probably tell someone else in your house. Yeah, I know. We should all chuckle, but it's true. You're telling Google the most personal things.
He's right.
So, in the bathroom.
It's true. And Jared, this is why I love having you on this program. We're going to go to Clay calling from Presque Isle. Hi, Clay.
Them to know.
Hey,
go ahead.
How you all doing?
Oh, no. Hold on just a second. What happened there? Okay, let's try that again. Let's see, Clay. I think we bumped a button. Are you there again?
I am. You're there.
Yep. Go ahead.
This is NASA. Hey. Okay. So, prepaid calling cards. I talked to a lot of people about this, and I even, of course, asked those English-speaking people that we can't do that with. So, my question is, when you buy a data card, and I don't know, 3 gigs or something, and you buy that, and you don't use all the data on that card when it runs out, why is it legal for them to not roll that over? And when you reply to this, make it simple to understand, because I want to make sure you get the question. And I'd like to, and I have another question after you answer this one.
Well, it's really important to make smart technology choices. There are companies that do provide better rollover of unused minutes than others. And sometimes that's the penalty you pay with some companies. And some consumer laws, maybe they need a little bit of update and they haven't accounted for this.
We do have to take a break, Clay. We'll keep you on the line and get the second part of your question when we come back. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Evergreen Home Performance, offering energy-efficient windows and insulation to help homeowners achieve year-round comfort. More at evergreenyourhome.com. And Evergreen Subaru in Auburn, committed to going the extra mile for its customers with a new express service lane. Learn more at evergreensubaru.com.
On the next Fresh Air, actor and comic Kumail Nanjiani and comedy writer Emily V. Gordon, they co-wrote and he stars in the new romantic comedy The Big Sick. It's based on how they met and later got married after she was placed in a medically induced coma. Nanjiani grew up in Pakistan, and in the film, his parents want him to have a traditional arranged marriage. Join us.
That's coming up tonight at 7 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio. And ahead in about 20 minutes here on Maine Public Radio, ideas from the CBC. It's a program called Distant Future Warnings, the challenges of communicating with eternity. As radioactive waste and toxic mining byproducts stay deadly for thousands of years, maybe forever, generations in the distant future will need to know about these places and to stay away. Again, that's coming up at 2 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, the return of our gadget gurus. In the studio with me, Andrew Rosenstein, owner of Techport, Jared Maxfield, owner of Necessary Technology, and Janet McKenney, the director of library development at the Maine State Library. Join our conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. We lost our call from Presque Isle, but we were having an interesting conversation during the break about how already where you are logged into your computer from, Jared, can make a difference in what you might be charged for something.
Yeah, they kind of call it, I don't know the exact term, but essentially dynamic pricing. You know, if you live in Cape Elizabeth, you might pay a couple bucks more for an airline ticket than somebody that lives in a more rural town that's, you know, not paying nearly as much in taxes or isn't as valued as much. They're using demographic data. Going back to the VPN thing, that would be the perfect thing that you would mask and hide because they don't know where you are. So, yeah, it's, you know, you go to different – it's not too far, honestly, off from, I mean, even retail stores. You might go to stores probably, you know, price things according to the market they're in. But all of a sudden on the internet, yeah, the provider can sell the exact same product for a couple bucks more, a couple bucks less here and there, essentially knowing their audience and knowing – who you are, like Andrew said. I mean, we all have a profile out there. It's all out there. I mean, your emails, your passwords, your information. I mean, it's all out there. It's just now some of these things we're talking about today is really going to allow them to get down to a really nitty gritty, very detailed level about who you are, not just the macro, but the micro.
We have a tweet from Michael. Please give a recommendation on whether to continue with Kaspersky antivirus software given the Russian government connection. Andrew, do you have an opinion on this?
I would think that
duh.
Yeah. it's probably okay to keep using it at, on a consumer level, but remember with anything you're using, you're trading back a little bit of information from about yourself. About, I mean, I'm sure that one of the things that I actually tell several of my customers is trade off a little bit. You should never have two antivirus applications running at the same time because bad things will happen. But you can trade off. Try one, and you know, you may want to double scan using two different applications, and that can catch something that the first one didn't, that the first one missed. So turn one off and try the other one. You know, we become too reliant on a single technology. There are free antivirus applications out there like Avast, very good. And so trade off once in a while.
Okay, I'll give you this one, Janet. Elizabeth on Twitter. In the healthcare environment, would VPN help keep your confidential documents more secure, HIPAA compliant? For example, if you were doing something off-site out of the office.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, I have an app and I can get to my medical records. You know, it's got my finger ID. When I get there, it's HTTPS. But I think with the VPN, your whole travel to that site and back to your site and anything that you do would be enclosed. So, you know, it depends on where you are. So if I'm going to access something in a place that isn't my home behind my own wireless network that's protected and encrypted, I don't know what other, you know, Wi-Fi networks are. And then, you know, how much do I trust AT&T or whatever my current, you know, wireless provider is? So, you know, it's how concerned you are about the security. I mean, there are bad people out there that will try to get information from you. Is the likelihood of something bad happening, I think, is really low. So it's your own personal risk assessment of how private do you want to keep that information.
And especially in the medical field and a lot of different companies, they actually, we've been talking about VPN for general use as software based, mm-hmm. but there's a lot of hardware that's actually VPNs. There are VPN routers. For example, if you have a company here in Maine and you have a location in California and you want to create a essentially, again, uh-huh. secure tunnel between your two locations, you could literally have hardware on site, VPN routers. They're essentially, you know, like when you used to the string with two cups
cans.
On it, you know, the two cans.
All that clunky software is built into the box.
Yeah, it's built into the box. In fact, there's a website, Indiegogo, kind of like a Kickstarter, and they have a product on here I've been watching for a month or so called Filter, but without the I. It's FLTER. And they advertise themselves as, and right now they're 234% funding, says they're going to be shipping soon. But VPN protection, malicious ad blocking, and Tor anonymity, all built into a router so that every device that you run in your house that goes through that router will automatically be protected from all these things. And I think that's a big place where we'll see this go in the future because, again, the software's got to be a one-on-one, put on each device, do all these subscriptions, as opposed to if this thing works and I read reviews in a couple months that people love it, I'd throw that in my house or office anytime because it will protect all the devices that are behind that. So it's not just hard software. We've got hardware options as well.
Right. We should mention one main company that's in the forefront of talking about internet privacy. GWI has done an amazing job in just speaking out that and reminding us that we need our privacy.
We'll go to Sam, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Sam. Go ahead.
Hi. I was calling wondering about why don't us as consumers, why don't we have more power over the data we generate? This data, I mean, literally generates billions and billions of dollars to ad companies, and we just really have absolutely no way of knowing what they have on us. Why aren't we getting paid for the data that they use to make money?
It's all those little tiny writings when you agree to policies. It's amazing what we are giving away. But at this point, without any kind of regulation, there is no choice.
Sounds like a good idea. We should all band together and sell our own stuff. But right. And that's the ability, you know, and that's when we go back to this option when they talk about in April what they changed with the ISPs. Actually, let me make sure I clarify this. I believe the law changes so the ISPs have to basically allow you to opt in or out of them collecting your data. But at the end of the day, we are always the one that handed over the keys. It's not 1984 where Big Brother has to spy on us. We are literally telling everybody all the time where we are, what we're doing, and between social media, our devices, and like Janet mentioned, just checking yes to these terms and conditions, we're handing the keys over. We do have the power, but if you want to use those services, you don't have any option.
Sam, thank you for your call. We're going to go to Tom in Dixfield. Hi, Tom. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thanks for receiving my call. I'm interested to know if your guests have any information on a program or a service called UnoTele that offers UnoDNS and UnoVPN.
Have not heard of it.
Haven't heard of it.
I haven't either.
Do you know about it or anything you want to tell us?
Well, actually, I used it a while back to watch some BBC programs that aren't allowed here in the States. And I was kind of interested in it, and I don't know much about it, and I'm thinking about subscribing to it, but I'm not sure if I have much use for it. It sounds like, with what you're saying about VPN, that UnoVPN might be a good way to...
it looks like UnoTele is a VPN service as well. So,
there are a lot of them out there, and I would say the top three things you want to look for are unlimited bandwidth, unlimited downloads, and it probably should be a paid service because then you have some guarantee that your data is not going to be sold by the VPN itself.
Okay, Tom, thanks for your question. We're going to go to Stephanie, who's calling from South Portland. Hi, Stephanie, go ahead.
Hi, yes. I wondered if this is related to the letters I get from financial companies explaining everything that they can share, and at the bottom it says you can contact us anytime to limit our sharing. Is that what you're talking about with all of this? Mm-hmm.
Similar. Yep. If someone actually sent you a piece of paper, that actually might make it easier than instead of reading the tiny letters on the bottom of a computer or phone screen. But similar things. I mean, many companies these days are going to essentially let you know either by law or by good practice how they use your data, how they share it, and give you your options on what you can do to limit that or be part of the process.
Stephanie, thanks for your call. We have two very related emails here. This is an email from Martha. I'm curious about using incognito. And an email from Renee. What about search engines having an incognito window option? I often use this when I'm buying airplane tickets, etc. Is this as private as I'm hoping or as private as a VPN? What is incognito? And they both shook their heads at two of the three guests shook their heads.
It's private between you and your computer, but after it leaves your computer, and Safari has private browsing as well, it just doesn't keep a record of your search or your internet history. Mm-hmm. But the information is still unsecured from your computer out into the ISP world.
Incognito, in fact, will even give you in Chrome, tells you specifically that it, just like Andrew says, limits what's collected by Google and by your computer, but not by the internet service provider, not by the websites you're visiting. You know, websites know where you're located, are you on a Mac or are you on a PC, what operating system are you running? I mean, we give out quite a bit of information just by hitting the homepage of a website.
Here's an email from TRJ. If you use Google, you deserve all the spam, et cetera, that you get. Why not promote civilized alternatives such as DuckDuckGo? You can put up with the name. You ever, Janet, used DuckDuckGo?
No, I haven't used that one.
Google it.
You should use it on your Tor browser, Janet.
There's a lot of controversy, like within librarianship itself, as far as pro Google and anti Google, and you know, part of it is convenience, part of it is the vastness. You know, what search engine should you use, and which one honors kind of privacy, you know, more than anything else. So, you know, I think in my early days of the internet, I probably used 5, 6, up to 10 different search engines. I think as I became older, I probably became lazier and you know, I'm most familiar with Google, but there's nothing wrong with using another search engine if it gets you the information that you want.
That's interesting that there's a controversy among librarians.
Oh, yes.
Anybody else thoughts on search engines?
Bring a book to a gunfight.
You can use a variety of different search engines. I mean, there are also other browsers that like Opera that are open source. And, you know, but all of them, there's no one solution for protecting your privacy except vigilance and a VPN, both begin with V.
An email from Doug. I see signs around my town in Hancock County about high-speed internet. What is that? Is it secure?
Well, it depends on who the sign says it's from. You know, it's just a company that's advertising. You know, as far as defining high speed, you know, I think it depends on who you're talking to. You know, what's considered, you know, considered high-speed internet and what's considered broadband. You know, I think the FCC recently changed, and I can't remember what they changed it, you know, from. But, you know, I would look at the smaller print and see what the name of the company was and do some investigation. You know, I hate to say at this point, Google it, but you can find out about that company and how their prices compare and how their speeds compare to other companies in your area by doing a little research.
I was going to say, I think we keep seeing advertised like something like Red Zone Wireless or something, they're basically piggybacking the same signals that your phones run on, but to deliver you wireless internet.
So. All right. Well, we just have about a minute and a half left, and I want to sort of get back to this idea of VPNs, because I think a lot of people are sitting at home thinking, boy, before this program, I never even heard of these, and now I'm feeling like I have to get one. Where does one start finding out what is a legitimate VPN, and how complicated is this?
Well, if you've ever downloaded an application, you can get set up with a VPN. There are lots of lists out there. I would look at reviews, a broad spectrum of reviews of current users. And once you download the software, you create a password, a username and password, and you may have to give them some credit card information. You are still giving up some data to somebody you don't know, but for the most part, stick with well-reviewed VPNs that offer you real service, and not just anything free is going to be an exchange. You're going to come, yes, you're going to lose something.
On that note, thank you all. As always, Andrew Rosenstein, owner of TechPort, Janet McKenney, director of library development for the Maine State Library, and Jared Maxfield, the owner of Necessary Technology. Jonathan Woodward ran the board today. Dan Plummer answered your calls. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.